Asguns kept firing just as well, scything down the handful of cultists that dashed up the passage to meet them. Something exploded close by, and a rush of smoke billowed. Goffrey's robes danced in the furnace winds. The lumen globes strung by wires along the ceiling clinked together and flickered on and off. Goffrey didn't care. Even should the lumens go out, the diffuse crimson glare that suffused the passages would be enough to navigate by. Even if he lost that light, he had the burning beacon of his faith to guide him. She was up ahead somewhere. Somewhere close. He could sense the false star of her soul amidst the gloom. "I am coming for you, deceiver," he muttered, and clutched that which hung about his neck, that which lay always close against his skin. His secret, hidden for so long, soon to be revealed.
"Major Blascane, how far has your assault group progressed?"
The Saint's voice came through on one of the Voxman's backpack sets. Just hearing it filled Blascane with new strength. That was fortunate, he reflected, because his original store was fading fast. Blascane was still technically convalescent, sorely wounded and hobbling into battle on a leg full of pins, while fluids gurgled through the pipes of his compression harness. It was painful and exhausting, but now here came the voice of the Saint, as soothing as any healing balm.
"Saint Celestine, we have progressed."
He paused to check the ore specs that Cassagelt held out for him.
"Just over half a mile from the entrance of Gilded Depths workings. Cultist resistance is stiffening rapidly, my lady. Our advance has slowed to a crawl."
But they were still advancing, damn it. Blascane and his command squad ducked into a side chamber, a claustrophobic rest space for miners, with a few rusty metal benches, some bare lumen globes, and a rack of hooks protruding from the wall for the respirator masks to hang on. Outside, the fury of gunfire echoed amidst battle cries and the screams of the wounded and dying.
"Keep pushing forward, Major," replied Celestine. "My group has progressed almost a mile into the workings, as have Sister Meritorius's warriors. I believe that we are nearing the enemy's inner sanctum. The Emperor requires heroism of us all in this darkest hour."
Blascane should have felt anger, or perhaps resentment, at the implication that his forces were lagging. Instead, he felt only an intense desire to do better and not let the Saint down.
"We shall redouble our efforts," he voxed.
"The Emperor guides your path this day. You will make him proud," said Celestine before cutting the vox link.
"You heard the Saint,"
said Blascane, looking around at his command staff.
"It's time we broke this damn deadlock. Cassagelt, appraisal."
The lieutenant set her ore specs on one of the metal benches with its screen visible to them all. She laid a data slate next to it, on which updating estimates of their and the enemy's strengths scrolled constantly in runic script.
"As you can see, this section of the workings has a single primary tunnel that runs southwest to northeast, away from the entrance and towards where the Saint believes our destination to be. We've the strength in numbers to force our way up the tunnel, but only slowly. Worse, the enemy are using side tunnels here, here, and here."
She pointed to skull runes flashing on the ore specs.
"To move flanking forces in from the levels below us each time we threaten a meaningful breakthrough."
"Can we outmaneuver them, or block those tunnels?"
asked Driver Jans, leaning intently over the ore specs with his knuckles on the table.
"Our enemy has a greater native knowledge of these workings than we do," said Cassagelt. "Our chances of catching them out through maneuver are slim. As for blocking the tunnels, that would require careful application of explosives. Our sappers would have to—"
"We're not blocking the tunnels,"
said Blascane. A strange calm had settled on him. An acceptance.
"Sir, you have a plan?"
asked Cassagelt. "Simpler than that, Astrid. I have faith," said Blascane.
Sir? Our enemy are fanatical, and what they lack in concentration of force, they make up for in delaying tactics and a steady stream of reinforcements, said Blaskane. Our numbers, meanwhile, are finite, our time even more so. The saint requires every warrior that can do so to break through the heart of this complex, for that is where the only battle of any import will take place. We are not going to make it in time if we continue to fight this battle of attrition, and if we fail her now, then it won't matter what else we do. Lieutenant, what is this tunnel here?
That is a crawlway, sir, said Cassegelt. A conduit for cabling and gas transference when the servitors are at the rock faces.
If I'm reading this right, it runs from 100 yards behind our current position to this location, half a mile deeper into the mines at the exchanger hub, yes?
That is correct, sir, said Cassegelt, her eyes lighting with excitement. And with the mines inactive, there's no gas down there. Soldiers could make their way along the crawlway at a crouch. We'd cover a half mile in a matter of minutes and appear substantially behind the enemy's current front lines. Throne, that's brilliant. Why didn't I see it?
When you've served as long as I have, began Blaskane, with a ghost of his former smirk. But Cassegelt was waving a hand, her face falling.
No, wait, sir, I did see it, but I discounted it. If we fell back on that position, it would be a slow maneuver with this many soldiers. As soon as the enemy grasped what we were doing, they could simply activate the compressor pumps and flood gas through the crawlway, or else just follow us down or collapse the passage.
Not if they're busy engaging a rear guard, said Blaskane. 1/5 of our remaining force will hold position while we quietly filter squads back and through the tunnel. When our numbers thin, the rearguard launch a full frontal assault up the main tunnel, draw the enemy's fire and hold their attention long enough for the remainder of our soldiery to fall back on the crawlway, enter it and proceed to the exchanger hub. With the Emperor's grace, that is.
It is a desperate decision, but it would have a high chance of success, said Cassegelt.
Blaskane felt pride as he watched his adjutant and protege working the numbers. And as he had known she would, Cassegelt set her jaw and looked him in the eye.
Sir, permission to lead the diversionary attack, she said.
Refused, said Blaskane. I will have that dubious honour, Lieutenant. She looked confused, then horrified.
Major, you can't. You are the senior officer in charge of this entire operation.
I can, Astrid. Precisely because I am the senior officer, and as such you are all required to follow my orders and allow me to get myself killed in whatever damn fool fashion I so choose, said Blaskane. Look at me. One arm, 1.5 legs at a push, worn down and wounded so badly I might as well be dead. What use will I be to the saint if I come hobbling into the heart of the enemy sanctum? I could, perhaps, die on the war engine's blade in a particularly distracting fashion.
Sir, I know that your wounds are shocking, but with the proper medical attention, began the medique.
But Blaskane cut him off with a sharp look. Do not mistake this for maudlin self-pity, he said. I am not some dewy-eyed martyr. I am not committing suicide by combat, and I'll shoot the first soldier to suggest it. I have led a long life in the Emperor's service, and during that time I have sacrificed many, many lives, some of them in exceptionally difficult circumstances. I have always told myself that those sacrifices were necessary for the furtherance of a greater imperial good, and I stand by that to this day. He heard again the sound of desperate cries, saw the fires of Cadia's death throes cut off by the closing ramp of his dropcraft. He knew that he had done the right thing, the difficult thing, no matter what anyone else said. Sometimes, just because one did the right thing, that did not stop one being damned for it.
If fighting in the light of the saint has taught me one thing, Blaskane continued, it is that sometimes, to do our duty to the Emperor, we must be willing to sacrifice more, all In fact, with nothing more than faith that our ending will prove worthwhile. I have finally come to a pass where the most strategically viable sacrifice I can make is that of my own life, not those of others. I will not have that decision diminished by questions about my reasoning. Do I make myself inescapably clear? The Cadians around him saluted, their faces grim.
Astrid, I'm placing you in operational command of Assault Force Charon, said Blaskane.
To her credit, his adjutant didn't protest any pretense of unworthiness, only nodded, her face pale but resolute.
Furthermore, I would have it recorded by all present that I am at this time enacting my right as a senior officer of the Departamento Munitorum to make a field promotion.
Blaskane fumbled awkwardly with one of his uniform pockets and produced a small metal pin, a skull with eagle's wings stretching from it, chased in gold.
Astrid Kassegelt, I hereby promote you to the rank of Captain of the Cadian 144th Heavy Infantry. May you serve the Emperor with honour, pride, and heroism.
Kassegelt's expression was unreadable as he pinned the captain's badge to her tunic and stepped back with a wan smile.
It looks right on you, Captain, said Blaskane.
Thank you, sir, she said.
Don't thank me, just earn it, said Blaskane,
wincing at a pain in the stump of his arm.
Now, I'm sorry to say that 2nd and 4th platoons will be remaining with me as rearguard. They look to be the worst torn up, according to your slate. Don't worry, Captain, I'll give them the good news. Just leave me one of the vox packs and I'll coordinate the muster from here. Meanwhile, you pull everyone else off the line bit by bit and get them moving through the crawlway. Keep it subtle. We'll hold out for as long as possible before we launch our push.
Yes, sir, said Kassegelt.
She paused, as did the rest of the command squad. Then as one, they saluted him again.
Enough. Get moving before my self-preservation instincts kick in, and I volunteer one of you in my stead, said Blaskane,
keeping his tone bluff to mask the tangle of emotions tightening in his chest. His soldiers hurried out of the chamber, ducking back into the screaming maelstrom of battle, and thence to their appointed places. Kassegelt was the last to leave. She looked back at Blaskane, and he saw fierce loyalty in her eyes, along with something else that it took him a moment to place. Approval, perhaps? Or was it pride?
I won't let you down, sir, she said.
You never have, Astrid, even when I didn't return the courtesy, said Blaskane, then cleared his throat. Go, make the Emperor proud.
I will, sir. I just hope I can impress him as much as you have, she said, and with that she was gone.
Blaskane took a deep breath and looked briefly at the stone ceiling. He listened to the gurgle of fluids through his surgical brace, felt the ache of his whole body, and worse, the pulsing darkness in his mind where he had forced the memories down. He offered a silent prayer to the Emperor and hoped that his reasons truly were as dutiful and selfless as he had said. He thought of the saint, of her golden light and her holy magnificence, of how his sacrifice would aid her in winning a great victory against the forces of chaos. That was enough. Blaskane picked up the Vox handset and keyed in a channel, linking to the Vox units of 2nd and 4th platoons, where they fought upon the firing line.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Major Blaskane, he said. I have new orders for you.
He drew a deep, shaking breath.
You are not going to like them, but you must trust me when I tell you there is no other way.
Sister Meritorius ducked, allowing her enemy's axe blade to whistle over her head. She surged back up, lunging with the point of her power sword. It plunged through the ornate breastplate of the Mastrekker warrior, its molecular disruption field parting metal, flesh, and bone. The man's eyes bulged behind the eyeholes of his leering demon mask. She ripped her blade free and kicked his legs out from under him. The Mastrekker fell,
and Meritorious stamped hard on the back of his head with one servo-assisted boot for good measure. Bone crunched and blood squirted, and her enemy convulsed in his death throes.
"Fight! Fight for the Emperor!"
she roared, swinging her bolter up and firing down a side tunnel. Another mass tracker jerked as her bolt shells punched through his torso, then detonated in a spray of viscera as they exploded inside him. Assault Force Beta had advanced at a relentless pace, the Cadians struggling to keep up with the power-armored Battle Sisters. Meritorious and her sisters sang as they fought, proud hymns echoing down the tunnels. Still, the droning note that filled the air had grown louder with every step they took deeper into the mines, and now it all but swallowed their plainsong whole. A squad of Cadians dashed past her, pelting up the steep slope of the tunnel with their bayonets fixed and lasguns spitting fire. Three of them fell to autogun rounds before their charge slammed home against the mob of cultists at the top of the stone ramp. Another two went down with mass dragger axes embedded in their bodies. Blood flew as the two forces engaged, and Meritorious dashed in to help. Her bullish assault slammed one cultist from his feet with a crunch of bone. The sweep of her power sword saw another collapse without a head, blood fountaining from the stump of his neck. A third warrior came at her, brandishing a miner's pick.
"Blood for the blood god!"
he screamed. Meritorious caught the downswing of his weapon on the flat of her sword, then twisted it and disarmed the cultist with a flick of her wrist. She smashed the pommel of her sword into his eye, hard enough to cave in from the front of his skull.
"You are not even worth my blade, heretic," she spat.
"Sister Superior, Auspex suggests a massive space beyond the next bulkhead door,"
voxed Sister Absalom.
"The Saint's signifier rune is closing. We are converging upon the same point."
"The enemy's sanctum, no doubt," replied Meritorious. "That would explain the sudden onslaught of mass Drekka."
They had so far used melter guns to cut through two huge armoured bulkheads that had been raised to cut off inner tunnels within the mines. They would handle this one in the same fashion. Meritorious switched vox channels.
"Assault Force Beta, all warriors, rally to these coordinates,"
she commanded, exloading the location of the bulkhead.
"Gird your courage, sons and daughters of the Emperor, for we come at last to the heart of heresy."
She switched vox channels again as warriors streamed past her and along the high-ceilinged tunnel that led towards the bulkhead.
"Saint Celestine, are you receiving me?"
"I hear you, Sister Meritorious," came the saint's voice, strong as steel and musical as a choir.
"Your forces and ours are about to converge," said Meritorious. "I believe we are at the threshold of the enemy's inner sanctum. What of Assault Force Charon?"
"They are overcoming delays. Sacrifices must be made, sister, but they will join us when the Emperor appoints it their hour to do so."
"Will you lead us in this final battle?"
asked Sister Meritorious. "I will fight at your side," replied Celestine.
"I am not... that is, I have not," said Sister Meritorious, her voice trailing off.
"You are, you shall, you always have and will," replied the saint without hesitation, and the firm warmth in her voice left Meritorious in no doubt that Celestine had seen the ashes and the fire, both within her heart. The void is dark, Aniqua Meritorious, and all stars wax and wane within it. But they rarely stop burning, and the darkness cannot diminish them. With that, Celestine cut the vox link. Sister Meritorious felt an incredible sense of release, a lightness in her chest and in her mind. The saint knew, and far from passing judgment, she offered only acceptance and strength.
"Emperor be praised,"
said Sister Meritorious, and set off along the tunnel at a run. She emerged through an arched entrance onto a metal gantry that ran above a wide staging chamber. Its floor had been levelled with ferrocrete and stencilled with bays and numbers for the dozens of mining machines and prefabricated labour units it played host to. These had been dragged out of position and heaped up to form barricades. Several side chambers led off from it, perhaps administration offices or rest areas during more peaceful times. The chamber's ceiling was strung with hundreds of lumen globes, whose light flickered fitfully amidst the hellish red glow. Most of the chamber's north wall was taken up by a heavy-set metal blast shutter, designed to slide open from the centre. It was daubed with the runes of the war engine, repeating over and over in hideous proliferation, and looked far newer than the rest of the room. Gunfire and screams echoed madly around the chamber. Meritorious saw that a hardcore of Mastrekker and flesh-robed cultists were holed up here, dug into the side chambers and hunched behind the barricades of machinery. They had crew-served heavy stubbers that raked back and forth across the chamber, streams of bullets whining from metal and stone, and punching through Cadians in puffs of blood. Dotted amongst the Mastrekker, she saw several especially huge and over-muscled warriors with black hoods, billowing skin cloaks, and ornate axes. She presumed these must be their champions, the cult leaders who had led their people astray, who had manipulated simple superstition into something darker. Meritorious could see the foul blessings the arch-heretics had received for their works, shallow augmentations of strength and physical presence. "Scant enough rewards for the souls of an entire world," she muttered in disgust. "Such are the wages of heresy." The Imperial forces had pressed up behind several barricades, but were otherwise confined to the chamber's southern entrances. Sprawled Cadian bodies showed where abortive attempts had been made to charge the stubber nests.
"Sisters, the enemy are dug in here and seek to prevent us from reaching their sanctum. Shall we relent?"
Her vox message was met by a suitably strident chorus of denial from the 9 battle sisters that still lived.
"Sister Superior, if the Cadians launch a 2-pronged push up the flanks, it should afford us the chance to move on the central barricades," voxed Sister Penitence. "Once there, we could hurl frag grenades into the closest gun nests and..."
Meritorious didn't hear the end of Sister Penitence's plan, for at that moment, Saint Celestine swept into the chamber from its southeastern entrance, her Gemini Superior close behind. The saint launched herself through the enemy's fire, bullets ricocheting from her armour. One Gemini landed atop a toppled hauler and unloaded her pistols into a stubber crew, blasting them apart. Celestine herself fell upon the Mastrekker with a cry of holy rage, her blade slicing through their bodies. Behind Celestine, a second Imperial force flowed into the chamber with their guns blazing, and Meritorious saw the balance of the battle shift. The stubber gunners tried frantically to draw a bead on the living saint, and their reserves burst from cover with howls of battle lust. "The enemy have thrown away their advantage in their eagerness to spill blood for their foul god," cried Meritorious, her eyes shining at the magnificent sight of the saint in battle. "So do all the slaves of the dark gods fail and falter. Forward, faithful, and slay them all!" Goffrey was livid. He had intended to catch the false saint while she battled through the confined tunnels. He had planned to set upon her from all sides, to spend his attendants' lives in an ambush that would have brought him close enough to strike the killing blow. Instead, he had been forced to fight his way through wave after wave of cultists. Each conflict had slowed him, and though he had seen the glow of Celestine's radiance ahead through the murk more than once, ever the agents of the enemy had impeded his holy work. "Just further proof of the demon witch's heretical nature," he muttered to himself. Ahead he heard the din of battle as the so-called saint led the charge. Goffrey had half expected her to abandon the army before the walls, and then had waited for Celestine to turn upon her followers during the assault up through the city's winding streets and into the tunnels beyond. Now, though, he knew her game. The dark gods do battle with one another, and use mortals as their playthings and tools, he thought, as he stalked along a sloping tunnel. Surely, then, this false saint was a servant of a rival deity, and would use them to strike down the war engine before turning upon those who remained. Worse, perhaps, she would lead them on into damnation unutterable. Then those in turn would fight for the gods of chaos. No, he would not suffer this witch to live another minute. This ended now. He saw an archway ahead, saw Cadian squads dashing through it and into a storm of criss-crossing gunfire. He would find the false saint here and expose her for all to see, for Goffrey's faith was pure, and witches must be burned. He nudged his thralls and sent them jogging ahead, slack-faced with their lasguns ready. One, though, he kept with him, a gunner in whose hands thrummed a plasma gun primed and ready, a weapon enough to kill even the risen saint. He smiled. Goffrey broke into a run, and as he did so, at last he drew out the mark of his order upon its heavy chain, and let it hang proud upon his chest. The rosette of the Holy Ordo Hereticus, the witch hunters of the Inquisition. Inquisitor Goffrey charged into the swirling melee in the chamber, the fires of his faith burning inferno hot in his breast. The witch Celestine would die, and all would see in the moment of her fall that she was but a demon temptress sent to lead them from the Emperor's light. Goffrey beheld her winged shape ahead and snarled a command at his thralls. As one, they advanced with their guns raised. In a smoke-filled corridor strewn with bodies, Major Blascane crouched behind a pile of sandbags. He bled from several bullet wounds and could barely feel his pinned leg anymore. The flesh had torn around several of his crude medical sutures, and more blood soaked his uniform. It hardly mattered now, he thought. He must have bought Casagelt long enough. The Emperor could grant him that much, couldn't he? Bullets thumped into his barricade. A few Cadians still remained, firing their lasguns back at the enemy from positions of cover nearby. But they were a spent force, and the enemy was massing for a last push. Blascane checked the charge on his las pistol again, flashing close to spent. Still a few rounds left, he thought. Perhaps the last was for himself. But no, he couldn't waste them. Each shot was for another heretic. His soldiers, his warriors, wouldn't have to fight. Let this be enough, he said, as he heard the enemy's chanting reach fever pitch. Emperor, I pray, let this be enough to settle my debts. Let this be my atonement. Let me be forgiven, and save me a seat next to Captain Macklin at your table, He thought again of the saint, leading the faithful survivors to victory on Cofin, despite all the odds stacked against them. It was enough. Blascane hauled himself to his feet. He levelled his pistol shakily into the red haze, and sighted through one eye at the milling figures half seen through the murk. He snapped off a shot, then another, then one more. At least one of them connected, and he was sure he saw another cultist go down. One final heretic sent to damnation before his end. Suddenly a hail of return fire shredded the barricade and his body into bloody tatters. Chan Blascane's body hit the ground, but he felt no pain. He felt only the calm smile of acceptance that spread across his features as the world vanished down a dark tunnel and the light of the Emperor blossomed before him.
Emperor, be praised,
he whispered, and then knew no more. Sister Meritorius sprinted across the open ferrocrete, enemy fire whipping around her. She fired back, pumping shell after shell into the heretics behind the barricade, blasting them apart. Her faith was a blazing fire. The saint was leading them to victory. Even as she watched, Celestine swept her blade down and took the head from another of the hulking enemy leaders.
That was the last of them. The enemy was slain. Only the war engine remained.
Sisters, melter guns, ordered Meritorious over the vox. Blast us a path. Surely the enemy's foul master lies beyond this portal.
Several battle sisters moved up, accompanied by a handful of Cadian weapon specialists with melter weaponry of their own. They poured microwave fire into the bulkhead until it glowed and shuddered. The bulkhead began to sag as their fire chewed through it, and Meritorious brandished her blade as she prepared to face whatever lay beyond. The sawing warp note in the air rose in pitch and vehemence, becoming a scrap code roar. She looked to the saint, who stood ready atop a barricade with her Gemini superior flanking her. Celestine's face was composed, her calm absolute. Meritorious drew strength from it. From behind her, Meritorious heard a commotion. She looked around with a sudden premonition of dread. A squad of Cadians was loping forwards with weirdly blank expressions on their faces, and her eyes narrowed as she saw Unctorian Goffrey accompanied them. Meritorious's frown deepened as her gaze alighted on the talisman slung around Goffrey's neck. She felt a moment of puzzlement as she absorbed the import of the inquisitorial rosette. Then she took in the angle at which the Cadians were holding their guns, the thrumming plasma gun at the rear of the squad, and Goffrey's mask of wild-eyed hate. Perhaps if there had been any psychers surviving within the Imperial force, they might have sensed the stirrings of Empiric power being used amongst the Cadian ranks and alerted their superiors. Perhaps those psychers would have warned their masters of the raw power they sensed, lurking somewhere within the Imperial ranks. The potent blend of psychic might and utter conviction hanging like a thundercloud over them all. The danger that the energies of the Great Rift might have tainted that power. But the Force had no psychers. None, except for Inquisitor Unctorian Goffrey, a witch sent in secret to find witches, an extremist of the most unmerciful and single-minded sort. A man for whom that which did not originate in flesh and blood and iron was by its very nature unholy and suspicious. A man who saw witches at every turn and had but one solution for dealing with them.
Saint! Yelled Meritorious, trying to throw herself between the Cadians and the saint. Celestine's Gemini were quicker, and as the lasguns flashed, the two armoured seraphim bounded into the path of the bolts. Sister Intolerus was blasted from the air, half of her face shot away. Sister Indomiter weathered the storm of las shots and returned fire, blowing two Cadians off their feet. Goffrey howled, and Meritorious saw his eyes blaze with otherworldly power. Sister Indomiter was hurled sideways by an unseen force, smashed through the air as though by the hand of a petulant god. She hit the far wall of the chamber with bone-breaking force and fell, limp as a rag doll. Meritorious opened fire on Goffrey as, around her, the Imperial forces turned in amazed confusion to see the conflict at the heart of their advance. Meritorious's bolts were intercepted by the bodies of Cadian thralls, who flung themselves into the path of her fire without a moment's hesitation. In return, their fellows opened fire on Meritorious and drove her into cover. The saint turned with a look of utmost sorrow upon her face. "Unctorian Goffrey, you need not do this," she said. And though she did not raise her voice, still it carried over the sounds of gunfire, the droning warp dirge, the hiss of melting metal and the crackle of fires. Your fanaticism has blinded you and made you an unwitting tool of the foe. And in your zealotry and your fear, you turn your hate upon that which you do not understand, even though it be the Emperor's own gift to you.
A witch's lies,
spat Goffrey, and his eyes flashed again. Meritorious watched aghast as a tracked cargo hauler the size of a small tank was hurled across the chamber. Celestine dived aside, evading the sailing mass, which instead slammed into the weakened bulkhead and tore through the softened metal to crash on into the chamber beyond. The warp dirge redoubled in volume. Meritorious saw into the space beyond the bulkhead, saw a nightmarish mass of brass gears and pistons and roaring furnaces, bloody muscle and stitched flesh, and staring eyes, rune-scrolling cogitator screens and flaring lenses, all stamped again and again with the skull rune of the blood god Khorne. The Cadians nearest the collapsing bulkhead cried out in terror as segmented metal tendrils and coiling cables slithered from the darkness. They tore off limbs and punched through bodies to shed sprays of blood. They coiled around necks and ripped heads from shoulders, dragging the severed skulls back into the mass of the demonic abomination.
"Is that the war engine?"
croaked Meritorious in horror. Her sanity threatened to crack under the strain of the sight, and only her newly restored faith kept it bolstered. Then she heard a fresh eruption of gunfire and spun back in time to see Saint Celestine sweep down upon Goffrey's Cadians. The saint fought with the flat of her blade, clubbing one man senseless, then spinning and backhanding a woman to knock her unconscious to the floor. In return, Laz fire rang from the saint's armour, and a frag grenade clattered down at her feet. Celestine kicked the explosive away and then drove her fist into another Cadian's face, flattening him. Recovering their wits and seeing the saint in danger, a handful of Cadians from Assault Group Beta raised their lasguns and advanced on Goffrey, yelling at him to cease his assault. Brave, thought Meritorious, to challenge the inquisitorial seal. Their bravery earned them death, for Goffrey had none of Celestine's restraint and crushed the Cadian's skulls with a flick of his mind.
"She is no saint," bellowed Goffrey. "She is a demon witch, sent to lead you into damnation. Turn your guns upon her in the name of the Holy Inquisition."
Some of the Cadians stood and gaped in confusion, as did most of the Imperial preachers. Yet Cadians are amongst the most highly trained and disciplined soldiers in the entire Astra Militarum. And, in the absence of a commanding officer from whom to derive their orders, most made snap decisions as to their loyalties. Maybe 30% of them obeyed Goffrey's command. The rest chose their faith in the saint. And as Meritorious watched in horror, the chamber descended into civil war. Cadian squads turning their gun butts and fists upon one another. It would be scant moments, she saw, before these exhausted, highly strung warriors lost the last of their hesitation and began shooting. And still the war engine's tentacles slithered further into the chamber, and its roar increased in volume. It was then that Meritorious knew what she must do.
"Sisters," she barked through her vox, "this discord serves only our foe. Have faith that the saint will defeat this false inquisitor. We must banish that which we came here to banish. We must slay the war engine."
With that, she turned her back on Celestine, who fought now in the midst of a mass of brawling Cadians, and advanced upon the tentacled horror beyond the bulkhead. Meritorious raised her bolt gun and began to pray, uttering the booming high Gothic words of the rite of banishment. Her weapon thumped, sending shell after shell whipping through the bulkhead to punch into the demon's flesh and blow sprays of gore from its mass. The fusillade thickened as Meritorious's sisters joined her, bolt shells and melter gun blasts ripping at the convulsing demon. Its roar grew louder, more furious, as its cogs were smashed and its flesh ruptured, as cogitator screens shattered, and eyes burst, and furnaces spilled their glut of flaming skulls. Cadians had joined her, Meritorious realized, their faces grim as they fought to complete the task the Emperor had set before them. Not all of them, though, she saw. The sight of this demonic horror had been too much for some of the brave soldiers, and they ran mad with terror, or fell to their knees, clawing their own faces bloody. Tendrils lashed out, punching through a man to her right and tearing him in two. A segmented metal tentacle lined with blades whipped around Sister Penitence's waist and hauled her forwards. Penitence was still screaming her hate and firing her bolter into the monster's mass as she was stuffed whole into a blazing furnace maw. Yet the demon was quivering and shuddering, its flesh becoming translucent as its grip upon reality faltered.
"Pray, sisters!" cried Meritorious. "Keep firing!"
It was then that she heard the distinctive whine and scream of a plasma gun firing behind her, and a sudden chorus of horrified cries.
"The saint! Emperor, no!"
"Burn the witch!"
came Goffrey's furious shout.
"Heresy!"
howled another voice, full of outrage and fury.
"Hold position! Eyes forward! Do not relent!"
bellowed Meritorious, internally screaming in frustration. She had to know what was happening at her back, but to relent for even an instant would be to let the beast rally and consume them all.
"Grenades!"
barked Meritorious, palming a handful of crack charges and hurling them into the shuddering mass of the demon that had turned Cofin into its own private slaughterhouse. More charges followed, sailing through the air in a cloud and clattering into the demon's chamber to implode with ferocious force. The war engine heaved and shuddered hugely. Its digitized roar reached a deafening crescendo, and its flesh-metal tentacles lashed out again and again. Yet now its body was burning and torn. Its ichor spewed in gouts across the chamber floor, and in places it began to turn transparent, then vanish altogether. Chunks of machinery clattered to the floor, no longer held within the corrupted mass of demon flesh. Wires sparked. Cogitator engines clattered down to silence.
"Flamers!"
ordered Meritorious, and brave soldiers advanced through the nest of flailing limbs to ply jets of fire across the disintegrating abomination. Several paid the ultimate price for their courage. Meritorious fired again and again until her clip ran dry and she slammed a new one into place. She ignored the sounds of gunfire and screaming and clashing blades behind her, shut out the boom of Goffrey's voice and the cries of the wounded, and kept firing. Aniqua Meritorious did her duty. At last, the war engine blew apart with an explosive blast of furnace-hot winds and atomized gore, and a death scream so deafening that it caused lenses to crack and ears to bleed. At last, with the abomination before her slain, Meritorious was free to turn and look upon the horror that had been wrought behind her back. Inquisitor Goffrey could feel blood streaming from his nose, weeping down his cheeks, from eyes that must by now be red with burst vessels. He had nudged dozens of Cadian soldiers to his cause, pushing so hard that he had killed almost as many as he had successfully enthralled. He didn't care. It was a faithless man who balked at the cost of doing the Emperor's will. It wasn't done yet, though. The saint's armour was cracked and blackened where lasbolts had pierced her body. She had torn free of her encumbering jump pack after Goffrey had crushed one of its finely crafted wings with his mind. Her face was a mask of blood where a Cadian sergeant's sword had opened her scalp. Yet still her eyes remained locked on Goffrey with furious intensity. Other Cadians, those too far lost to heresy to hear Goffrey's warning, had rallied to her. Now she came at him with her blade raised, and the once proud soldiers of the Astra Militarum flayed each other with point-blank gunfire.
"This heresy ends now!" roared Goffrey, and nudged his plasma gunner hard.
The man's first shot had been stopped by Acadian selflessly hurling herself into the path of the blast. Determined to avoid the same thing happening again, Goffrey focused his will and, with a scream of pain, bludgeoned aside those soldiers between himself and the false saint. Bodies tumbled, bones broke, and something in the Inquisitor's mind tore.
"Now!"
he growled through the white-hot wash of agony.
Overcharge and fire!
His thrall obeyed, the coils of the man's plasma gun glowing, its capacitors screaming as they gathered their ferocity. The false saint saw the danger and lunged, but too late. There came a blinding flash, a howl of energetic discharge, and Celestine was struck full in the chest by a ravening ball of sun-hot plasma. The shot lifted her from her feet and threw her backwards to crash against the mangled metal of a barricade. She gasped in agony, and well she might, for Goffrey saw with vicious satisfaction that her chest was a molten ruin of fused armour and blackened flesh and bone. How the damned woman was even still breathing with such a crater in her was beyond him, but Goffrey knew now was his moment. As the faithless cried out in dismay at their saint's fall, Unctorian Goffrey strode towards her, his vision shimmering crimson at its edges. Now, witch! Now, demon! Now comes the judgment of the Holy Inquisition! Now I shall do the Emperor's work and strike you down, that the scales may fall from the eyes of all who have followed you unto damnation.
It was then, as he stood over the blooded, gasping false saint, that something roared and struck Goffrey in the back with sledgehammer force. The world jolted, and it took him a moment to realize that he had been driven to his knees, his entire back reduced to a blazing mass of agony. Goffrey fumbled behind him, and his palm came away dripping and red.
What?
He croaked. Captain Cassagelt pumped her shotgun and advanced towards the fallen preacher. Somehow he was still upright, despite the full-bore blast she had unloaded into him. She resolutely ignored the wounded form of Saint Celestine beyond him, lest the sight undo her entirely. What, in terror's name, had happened here? She wondered.
All Cadian soldiery stand down and ship arms with immediate effect, she barked, her voice carrying more authority than she felt.
Around her she saw soldiers stepping back with relief, others shaking their heads and dabbing at bleeding noses, as though emerging from some sort of trance. One man swung his gun to bear upon her, but was instantly clubbed down by the soldiers to either side of him. No one else reacted. Impossibly, the saint was pushing herself to her feet, blood sluicing down her legs from the catastrophic wound in her torso.
Saint Celestine, please don't try to move, urged Cassagelt,
then yelled for a medicay. Celestine shook her head and took careful, steady paces towards Goffrey, her blade held in one shaking hand.
Unctorian Goffrey, your zealotry and fear have blinded you and made you a tool of the enemy, rasped the saint, blood trickling from the corner of her mouth.
Lies!
Goffrey hissed, still trying to fight his way to his feet, despite the wads of buckshot that had severed his spine. Cassagelt frowned as she felt waves of force emanating from the fallen priest, then gasped in shock as she saw those same forces stir his robes and lift him to his feet.
In the very lair of the abomination that enslaved this world to the will of the dark gods, you turned the Emperor's noble warriors against one another at the moment of their triumph, said Celestine, her voice grating and raw. You are no better than Horus the Betrayer.
Heretic, I name thee Traitoris Extremis.
Do not listen to her lies,
Goffrey screamed, apoplectic with rage, and Cassagelt heard clearly the madness in the man's voice. Exhausted Cadians stared from every side, unsure whether to intercede, whether to aid the saint or restrain her bloodied assailant, wary still of the inquisitorial rosette that hung from his neck.
You have profaned the Emperor's faith and made of it a lash with which to goad your fellow man, spat Celestine, raising her blade double-handed. You do not believe in the will of the Emperor, but instead invoke his name to excuse your own monstrous deeds. I have love and sympathy in my heart for every loyal soul, no matter how wayward or lost they might be. But you, Unctorian Goffrey, your very fanaticism has transformed you into that which you hated most, and the darkness will be lessened by your passing.
Cassagelt felt unnatural forces whirl into being around Goffrey and cried out a warning to the saint. Celestine's blade swung through the air, a streak of silver amidst the gloom, and the Inquisitor's head tumbled to the bloody ground. His body followed it, the thrumming pressure leaving the air, as Goffrey's powers died along with his mind. The next instant, the saint fell in turn, her sword slipping from her grip, and her eyes rolling up into her skull. Chapter 6. First Day of Peace. 0616 hours. Imperium Nihilus, Planet Kofin, Shambach Ore District. LO 800-8/LA-631-2. They bore Saint Celestine out through the mines and into the cold night air. Meritorious allowed Captain Cassagelt to assist her and her sisters in bearing the saint out of the demon's lair. Tears ran down their faces as they walked, stately and somber, bearing Celestine upon a makeshift bier. The crimson glare was gone from the tunnels, so that only bare lumen globes lit their path. The awful droning dirge had halted in the instant of the war engine's demise. Now silence reigned, and in it the clink of war gear and the whine of armor servos was as loud as Celestine's ragged breathing. The Cadians were too exhausted, or else too stoic, to set up any sort of mourning cry for the fallen saint. And when the priests had attempted to exhort them to it, Meritorious had silenced them with a cold glare. This would not be a grotesque spectacle of zealotry. She had witnessed where such perversions of the imperial faith led a man, and his body burned at her back, consigned to the same fires as the demon. Meritorious knew it would be dignified, for it was what she deserved. They laid the saint upon the stone flags of the courtyard through which they had entered the mines. They set her broken Gemini sisters beside her, offered the same honour in death as their mistress. The Cadian medicaes did what they could, applying gels and dressings, but they expressed their doubts that Celestine would even regain consciousness, let alone live through her terrible wounds. And so Meritorious and Cassagelt stood, attending the saint as her breath rattled in and out, unsure what else to do. Aides came and went, providing the Cadian captain with data slate reports that she looked over swiftly before muttering orders and sending her subordinates hurrying away. Meritorious nodded in approval. Major Blaskane was right to promote that one. Command came naturally to her. "Listen, the fighting has stopped," said Cassagelt. Meritorious realized the Cadian was right. She could hear fires burning, voices crying out in loss or bewilderment or pain, but no gunfire. "The city languishes beneath a pall," she said. "Do you suppose that, with the demon's banishment, its influence over the populace was broken?" "I fear the truth is rather grimmer," said Cassagelt, as she scanned a data slate handed to her by one of her aides. "We're receiving reports of mass suicides amongst the cult forces. They correspond with the demon's demise."
"All of them?" asked Meritorious, aghast.
"Thousands upon thousands taking their own lives in unison," she thought, "and all of them once loyal servants of the Emperor."
"All of them," confirmed Cassakelt. Perhaps it is better, said Meritorious. They were irrevocably tainted. There would have been no forgiveness for them this side of the grave. I'm just glad they aren't still in the field and seeking revenge, said Cassakelt. I feared this would prove a Pyrrhic victory at best, and yet here we stand, thanks to her.
She looked down at the prone form of the saint.
Should we offer up prayers?
My sisters already do so, but if any of your soldiers wish to join them, it would seem appropriate, said Meritorious. The Emperor should know the victory that the saint led us to this day, and of our gratitude to her.
He does, came Celestine's rasping voice as her eyes opened. They knelt at her side.
Rest, my lady, don't exert yourself, said Cassagelt. You've been sorely wounded.
Celestine offered the Cadian a wry ghost of a smile.
The Cadian talent for understatement still survives, I see, she whispered,
and a cloud passed across her features.
I am sorry, Captain. I fought at the fall of your world, and I could not save it.
Cassagelt appeared lost for words, and so Meritorious spoke for her.
Saint, you have led us to a great victory upon Cofin with the light of your faith.
More soldiers were gathering now, Cadians and battle sisters, and even a few surviving Asterosian tankers formed a somber crowd around the fallen saint. Many bore hastily dressed wounds, while others leant on lasguns as makeshift crutches. Still, they only had eyes for Celestine, and Meritorious thought briefly that they must resemble some scene from Scripture. Perhaps, if she ever escaped this world, she would see to it that the moment was recreated in glacéic or tapestry.
I fought alongside you, and...
She paused, choking.
I offered the Emperor's counsel, nothing more. It was your faith, your strength and courage, your determination, that brought us victory this day.
Around the circle, the wounded soldiers stood a little taller, fires kindling in their eyes at the saint's words. Meritorious felt a surge of tremendous love for Saint Celestine in that moment, for she had helped her to stoke the fires of her own faith again, and now they burned hotter than ever before.
The demon is banished. Yes?
Asked Celestine, coughing painfully. Her bald fist came away from her lips, arterial red.
It is Saint, answered Meritorious. We slew it by bolt, and by blast, and by flame.
An initial inspection suggests that the war engine was as much machine as demon, said Cassagelt. Our engine seers are working on the hypothesis that the locals had some sort of dark age thinking machine hidden away up here, and that for whatever reason they activated it when the rift came. We can only guess at their motivations or how the machine intelligence came to be corrupted by a demonic entity, but...
Cassagelt tailed off, as she felt everyone's eyes upon her. This is an officer who boils everything down to data to cope with loss, Meritorious realized. The saint placed her hand upon Cassagelt's and nodded slightly.
My thanks, Captain. It is good to know the nature of the corruption that we have put a stop to here today. But there is such a thing as blessed ignorance, for the demon corrupts those who seek to understand rather than abhor. Burn everything that remains, and have your priests purge there.
The saint broke off as another coughing fit racked her.
Of course, my lady, said Cassagelt.
Meritorious felt a slight warmth upon the nape of her neck. She looked up,
and saw the first light of the dawn sun was creeping around the mountain peak.
"What do we do now, Saint?" she asked, looking back down.
"You have served," said Celestine, her voice wavering down to a whisper. "You have found faith and duty within yourselves. You must strive every day to keep them in your heart. You are the soldiers of the Emperor, and you will carry your light forwards into the darkest of places without fear or doubt."
"My lady, we will do as you ask," said Casagelt, "but I fear we will never do so beyond the bounds of this world, for we have no way to escape it."
"The Emperor provides," whispered Celestine with a smile. The saint's breath rattled painfully in her ruined chest. Surely, thought Meritorious, she did not have long. The sun's rays limned the mountain peak as the sky flushed pastel blue and russet above them. A spear of sunlight fell upon the courtyard, and the assembled soldiery gasped in awe as it crowned Celestine with a flickering halo. Meritorious thought she saw peace in the saint's eyes in that moment, but something else as well. A sense of foreboding, perhaps.
"Sir!"
came a shout as a Vox officer pushed through the circle to reach Casagelt's side.
"Sir, it's a damned miracle!"
Casagelt shot the man a sharp glare. "Strefsky, show some damned respect," she snapped in a low voice. "Now what is it? What's a miracle?"
"Ships, sir,"
said Strefsky, suitably chastened but still burning with excitement.
"Imperial Navy ships in orbit and requesting to speak to our senior officer."
"How can that be?" asked Casagelt in wonderment.
"We were cut off. No one even knew we were here."
"Astropathic vision, sir,"
said Strefsky.
"The captain wasn't too clear, but it sounds as though someone saw something divine. A golden figure that led them through the storms and got them here. Now..."
"The Emperor provides," breathed Meritorious. She looked down at Celestine, but her words of thanks died on her lips. The saint's eyes had turned glassy and unblinking. Her body had become utterly still. Saint Celestine had passed beyond the veil. Beyond.
Consciousness, sudden and violent. Her eyes snapped open and hellish red light poured in. She gasped and sat up, one hand going to her ruined chest. She found it whole beneath her palm, the material of her shift undamaged, the flesh beneath it unsullied.
She blinked as her vision slowly returned, as she perceived the osseous mountain upon which she had awoken. She did not know her name, nor where she was, nor how she had got here. As panic threatened, she felt a slight warmth upon her cheek, like the light of a candle or the brush of small, warm fingers. In that moment, she knew she must follow it, and that if she did, all would eventually be well. That was Celestine the Living Saint by Andy Clark, read by Emma Gregory. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2019.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.